Hello and welcome, everybody. My name is Jan-Kjell Lange, and you're listening to Talking Progress, a podcast by das Progressive Zentrum. This podcast explores new ideas for social progress in Germany, Europe, and transatlantic spaces. Today, you're listening to our transatlantic series on the industrial heartlands and the just transition. This podcast is part of a project called Transatlantic Dialogue on the Industrial Heartlands, Shaping the Future. It's a collaborative effort led by das Progressive Zentrum, working alongside our dear partners at the Progressive Policy Institute, Georgetown University's BMW Center for German-European Studies, and the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Industrial heartlands in the United States and Germany stand at a historic turning point. After decades of industrial decline and only partial revitalization, these regions confront overlapping challenges of geopolitical tension, economic uncertainty, and technological transformation. With our project, we have been developing solutions for a better, greener, and more democratic life in the industrial heartlands in the United States and in Germany, places that are often overlooked. Today, we will focus on the key insights of our closing conference titled Heartlands, Navigating Rearmament, Recarbonization and Realignment. This conference, held in December 2025, served as a grand finale to our project. While this closing conference marked the official end of the project, the dialogue does not stop here. In this episode, we want to focus on the role of local governance. During our project, we have visited places in the industrial core regions of the US and Germany, like Pittsburgh and Cottbus. We wanted to explore how communities in these regions are managing the challenges and opportunities of the ongoing structural transformation. While there are different dynamics at play on each side of the Atlantic, and really also within each area, we could identify the substantial influence of local governments on the day-to-day life of its citizens. Is the school well equipped? Is the bus still running in the evening? Will the energy bill keep on rising? What happens to my job if local industrial structures fade? These are largely matters for the local government, and this is what's on people's mind. And it's important to find accountable and well-communicated answers, because uncertainty, opaque communication, and shortcomings in delivering these fundamentals erode trust in politicians and diminishes democratic participation. We could see this in the past elections on federal and state level. The cost of living, economic uncertainty, and discontent with public services were main drivers to turn to populist driving parties, even more so in regions facing fast-paced and substantial structural transformations. As we have already discussed in the third episode, winning over the former industrial hubs Pennsylvania and Michigan in the US were pivotal for the win of Donald Trump in the last presidential elections. And we are in the middle of an important election year. After municipal and state-level elections in four states in Germany, four more are to come. In November, all eyes will be on the midterm elections in the US. At the same time, these transformational processes are also opportunities for democratic and economic resilience. Innovative and forward-thinking in local governance can produce central new industrial sites in the future, putting these places that do not matter back on the map. Transatlantic cooperation between cities and municipalities can strengthen democratic ties and grant sovereignty, which is so important looking at the increasingly intertwining uncertainties from climate and trade to security. At our high-level mayor panel, Shifting the Tide, as part of the closing conference, we welcomed two mayors from the US and Germany, Eckhard Würzner and Steve Patterson, who talked with us about their transition strategies. Eckhard Würzner has been the Lord Mayor of Heidelberg since 2006 and is known for a strong focus on climate protection and sustainable urban development. Since 2019, Würzner has also served as first vice president of the Association of German Cities. In this national role, he represents the interests of German municipalities in discussions with federal and state governments, particularly on climate, housing and urban policy. Mayor Steve Patterson has lived in Athens since 1998 and served as an associate professor at Ohio University until becoming mayor in 2016. He's active on numerous boards, including as immediate past president of the National League of Cities and chair of the Sustainable Ohio Public Energy Council and OPEC. The two cities seem different at first glance, but at a deeper look they reveal a common challenge of structural transformation. The conversation focuses on what has worked to develop general principles for local governance that provides an anchor of stability in times of transformation, fosters democratic dialogue, and leads the way to sustainable and modern economic hubs. Enjoy listening to the conversation with Claire Ansley, director of the project on center-left renewal at the Progressive Policy Institute, who moderated the panel.
A little bit about Athens, Ohio. We are a community that was established in 1797 by charter from President Thomas Jefferson at the time to create a community that has an institution of higher education, which is really a blessing to me with the city of Athens. We're home to Ohio University, which was established in 1804. We're in the heart of the Appalachian region of Ohio. There are 32 Appalachian counties in the state. All of them basically are in close proximity to the Ohio River in the Ohio River Valley. And with that, as you can imagine, we have certainly lived through our series of booms and busts when it came to extraction. The Appalachian region of Ohio has largely been operating off of an extractive economy. First, it was, believe it or not, it was trees and denuding everything, but then it transitioned to discovering oil. That was harvested until there was nothing left, and then they moved on to coal. And of late, although we're at the very southern edge of the Marcellus Shale play, natural gas, much like Pennsylvania, New York, and others, other states have recognized that that resource is there. But to the fact that we have Ohio University, again, is a real advantage to for my community in that it lends itself to us being pretty forward thinking in how we address climate change, being good stewards of Southeast Ohio, in that we have been able to reach a goal that I find truly remarkable, to where our carbon emissions per capita is the lowest in the state of Ohio and is in the top 10% in the United States, which we fully recognize. And a lot of it is because of our movement to make sure that renewable energy is in our portfolio for all of our municipal electric accounts. We have also kind of made things easier for our residents here in the city of Athens to have solar on their homes or ground mount in their yards somewhere, to where we used a group called SolSmart, and we're able to achieve SolSmart Platinum, which basically means a resident in Athens can apply for a permit to put solar on their homes and take advantage of some credits that are out there. And they can get that permit within 24 hours, which is unheard of, you know, for permitting in residential neighborhoods these days. But we were able to achieve that. And to that end, Athens is also has been home to several local solar companies. Once upon a time, we had more solar installers per capita than any other city in the state of Ohio. Change occurs, that has shifted, but we have been working closely with Kokosing Solar, which Kokosing Construction is one of the largest construction firms in the nation when it comes to general contractors. They have also kind of migrated into the solar world. And the thing that we really honor about the relationship that we have with Kokosing, they're the ones who built out our 2.1 megawatt solar array, which powers my wastewater treatment plant, my community center, our seasonal swimming pool is 100% powered by the sun, is that they are a union shop, and they have a union apprenticeship program, which to us is really meaningful for producing good jobs, good paying jobs for those who are interested in being a player in the renewable energy sector in our community. So we're constantly shaking things up in Athens, but we don't keep it a secret to ourselves. We are always partnering with other municipalities not only within the Appalachian region of Ohio, but also groups like Reimagine Appalachia, which kind of spun off of or went live in parallel with another group that was called the Marshall Plan for Middle America, which we recognize that our industrial heartland here in the Ohio Valley has changed, and not necessarily in the past for the better. Things actually got much worse when it came to a lot of our manufacturing, a lot of the steel production. But this group has come together to make sure the voices of the Appalachian region are being conveyed up on Capitol Hill, also in our state houses, to say, look, we've got infrastructure in place. We know that we can do better. We're all wanting to see good jobs and to be a part of the renewable economy moving forward in time. And I think that we're slowly on that path, regardless of the narrative that is coming out of the White House these days. That local leaders, you are the closest to the people, and I can't stress that enough. And with that, it takes me 2.5 hours to go through Farmers Market because everybody wants to tell you what's going on in their community, what they like, what they don't like, which is great. That's my job. But to be able to share those stories in the State House and also take that up to Capitol Hill, we're able to convey what is really going on in our communities and throughout the regions. So I'll put a pause there because I know we've got a number of other questions, but thank you for having me.
No, it's great to have you. And actually, I've got a follow-up question for you on that particular theme, if I may, and then I'm going to come to Mayor Versner. Mayor Patterson, you mentioned the point of a kind of energy being absolutely central, and you talked about it in very tangible ways that citizens could really feel the benefit. One of the kind of tensions for us in this whole project is how we describe and deliver what might be called kind of green transformation or clean energy or climate change policies. Can you say something for us about how important it's been to win people over to the kind of cause with really kind of practical benefits to them, like you just described, as opposed to sometimes how the campaigners might set big targets in the future, but they sometimes perhaps worry voters. Can you tell us about how important that's been? Because that might be really helpful for our fellows in bridging these two papers they've got together.
Yeah, I'll put this in basically the simplest of terms, which it really boils down to showing your community that you are truly being a good and proper steward of their taxpayer dollars. City of Athens and cities in the state of Ohio have the ability to levy an income tax. While there are a lot of other cities, it's property tax or it's sales tax or things of that nature. In Ohio, it's income tax. And when I am able to show them the $450,000 budgeted electric bill for my wastewater treatment plant each year, and then also show them, here's the savings of your taxpayer dollars with using green energy to power that, and it's about 45 to 50% of that energy consumption that is now coming from the sun for that highest energy consuming government account, that resonates with people. They're sitting there going, so then it becomes, well, then Mayor, what are you doing with that $250,000, $300,000 that you don't have to put towards, you know, your grid energy? And I can sit there and point to other programs that are equally important. We're enhancing our tree canopy. We're planting more trees. We're, you know, having more EV charging stations here in the city of Athens for people who want to have the comfort of a EV that they know they can get a boost whenever they want to, or tourists coming into our community. So there's so many layers to being able to demonstrate that this is the right path. And the citizens of Athens really enjoy and respect what we've been able to accomplish. And then again, the residential, you know, what a pain it can be to have to go through weeks, if not months, of trying to get a permit for various things to include getting solar on your roof. And now you can have it done within 24 hours. You know, that means that we are pushing the envelope as far as we possibly can to make sure people have equal access to reducing their own energy bills.
Great, thank you. And I love that example of the 24 hours, because it also speaks to what we've heard from a lot of voters, which they're not sure, they don't necessarily believe government can deliver from them anymore. So when you're getting that restriction out the way and you make it easy for people, it becomes more intuitive. So I'm going to turn now to Edgar Versner, please, to be able to tell us a little bit about your place and your kind of story of economic change. But also, if you have any reflections on some of the international cooperation work that I know that you've been involved in around climate action, particularly, and how that can enhance what you're doing in place, but also transatlantic relations.
Yeah, first of all, Claire, and dear my friends, I just try to get a small overview about my city, about the situation in Germany. First of all, I want to make a comment. Great success. Because if we have this experience exchange for the next generation, I think it's the best thing we can do. I'm also a German Marshall Fund fellow. I've done a study about the climate action plans of American cities 13 years ago for the Center of Clean Air Policy in Washington. So long time ago. So I was becoming an environmental mayor of my town. And I'm now 19 years mayor of this town, which is called Heidelberg, oldest university in Germany, very historic, 10 million tourists a year. But the biggest problem was when I was becoming in charge to be the mayor, that we were like a big museum. It was like Venice. Everybody wants to go there, but the population was nearly shrinking. We have the lowest birth rate. And then something hit the city, which was also of a big effect of my town, is America left Heidelberg. So the U.S. Army, the U.S. Land Forces, Europe were in Heidelberg. The NATO was in Heidelberg. So it was an area of about 300 football fields, full of houses, people, gas filling stations. NATO headquarters were empty 16 years ago. So this was really a brownfield shift, which we have to tackle. We took the position over because we are not really an industrial city. We are more a brain city or a university town. But we took over this new situation, and we really had implemented the same strategy as the students mentioned. We started with a huge dialogue with the citizens in the main fields. How we can develop the city, in which way, in which direction. And what we have done was we make a brutal shift. We decided to become the first city in Germany with the biggest impact of brain solutions or intellect or use your, we always say use your brain, and then you're not on a political level. So we started big campaigns, how to combat global warming at the local level. We had a huge debate with the industry, with farmers, with craftsmen, and decided, yes, this can be a chance for our city. Use the best technology, implement the best technology, implement the new technology centers, use them in practice, and we decided to rebuild the 300 football fields climate neutral. And this was done by a city council decision for the next years. Every second year, we make a balance where we are and where we wanted to go. Today, it is globally or in Europe, the biggest climate neutral city area, which was built over the last 15 years. All these areas are filled up with people, with new employment structures. So we created more than 6,000 to 8,000 new jobs. Now in a town of 160,000 inhabitants, it's quite a lot. And we were able to implement all those new technologies in our town. So life science, AI technology, or IT technology, and becoming today the city with the highest number of startups based on AI technology, on life science, We have the German-wide biggest medical clinic now. We have 1 million patients. The National Center for Tumor Diseases, the European Center for Microbiology, the four Max Planck Institutes from Germany. So it's all national, supranational, European-wide. And this concentration is now our biggest treasure. So because we have no resources, no gas, no oil, no coal, we just sweep like a sandbox city, use technology which is available, like solar, water. Today we heat the whole city with long distance heating networks, already 50% based on green. In 5 years, we are 100% green served. The whole city, all buildings, not only the residential or not only the municipal owned buildings. We have today the highest number of citizens using bike. About 79% of the citizens are not using a car anymore. They're using bicycles, they're using the mass transport, which we spend a lot of money, and they're going as a pedestrian through downtown. How we have done this? We make a big shift. We were an administration. We changed this to become the biggest developer in the city, in the region, in Germany. So what we created first is a city bank. I have now in my city bank about 6 billion euro, which I use to support companies, to support building companies, industry companies, and so on. We kept and rebuilt our own energy utility. So the biggest cash machine we have is now our energy utility. Could use a lot of money by buying green energy and selling green energy. So it's also a money-making process. It's not only an environmental program. And by doing so, we can co-finance mass transport system, which is brutally expensive and is always a subsidy program. So we become a little bit more independent from national-wide programs and become, by doing all those programs, a real actor, not an administration who's implementing dialogues and using new tools. We behave like the mega developer in our city. And we use a lot of private investment because we don't have the money. But what we have done through these structures, therefore, I always say we need a structure discussion, is empower cities. That's what we're doing in Germany. That's what I'm always trying to discuss with my friends in Chicago, with Laura Lightfoot, for example, when she was in charge as the mayor of Chicago. And Gary Newsom is a good friend of mine, who was not the governor at that time, when he was in San Francisco, and Eric Garcetti in LA. So we had all those long tradition corporations to empower us, because what we noticed is that there is a new way of not only communication, that there is also a new way of behavior. We cities, we are the powerhouses. We are the democracy-based infrastructures who kept future concepts. And by doing so, sometimes we are getting too effective. This might stress sometimes a little bit also national governments, but this is the way into the future. And we wanted to be good partners, but we wanted also to have a fair and clear commitment to be empowered. So if you have not local and regional empower programs based on looking for own water resources, use them by yourself, or energy resources, decentralized resources, that not only PG&E, for example, Pacific Gas and Electric Company, is taking over the whole energy supply. You have to work with your regional or local resources. That's the way into the future. That's what German cities always try to do. That's the reason why we're working together with Bloomberg. That's the reason why Heidelberg is an expert city in the C40s initiative. Also, if we are very small, I brought Bloomberg into the European Cities Network. So we're working now together in our initiative of the compact of mayors with about 14,000 mayors on the global scale together. Everybody make this self-commitment. That's the way into the future. And by coming back to the students, I have to say absolutely the right way. But please don't misunderstand me. You have to look a little bit into details, because those cities who are empowered or empower themselves by taking over lead energy supply, water supply, mass transport system, Citibank giving loans to all those partners. If you look at these structures, you notice who is really going into the future. Because if you don't empower the cities in this direction, only a city of dialogue is not enough. And the main movement we have in Germany now is also, small comment, last comment, women's. Women's are leaving towns with no hope. That's what you also mentioned in your report. If you have no hope, especially young women, good educated young women, leave your town. And then you just have boys, not so good educated. You have a very heavy political shift. You can't get the city under control. So try to create a structure where women's notice you have good schools, good kindergartens, that their life is a perspective for them. Then they don't leave the city. Today, as I mentioned, Heidelberg, lowest birth rate in Germany. Heidelberg today is the city with the youngest population in Germany. Why? Kids not from overseas, kids from all over Germany and Europe. Because women are coming with the kids to our city. And this is then a perspective for the futures. So many thanks.
Thank you, Mehr. That was, I think, completely fascinating. And I think being able to describe the role of almost the state at that city level as being a developer, an enabler, being almost hungry to make the opportunities happen rather than reliant on quite old forms of governance. I just have one question for you, and then I'm going to, I want to come back to Mehr Cognetti, particularly about the relationship between the local and what we might say to Congress, like what that message up, if you like, to the next level is. But my question to you, Mehr Vösner, was just, if you were listening to this and you were a city leader who hadn't gone down this path yet, but was inspired by what you said, where do you start?
Where I started?
Well, where would you, if you wanted to follow the path that you've taken in Heidelberg, where you've understood the assets in your place.
I would say one sentence. Think global, act local. It's not a stupid sentence. Think global means use global knowledge. You have to use global knowledge. And you have to believe in knowledge. If you do so, and you try to convince your citizens by doing so. Of course, this is sometimes easier in university town than in other towns, that if you do so, you can create hope by showing opportunities. I give you just one example. When I started this political debate, our buildings, which were super efficient, much better than LEED's gold standard in the US, they were too expensive. No Heidelberg building company wants to build in my area, in my city. So I went to American friends. I went to international friends. They said, hey, Eckhart, that's a future-oriented concept. It works if you get the support, and they support at the beginning. This was very important. So use those global approaches to show that with this approach, you can create money for the city, to subsidize the social and school programs and education programs, which cost a lot of money. And by doing so, you create the hope that you can change something. Also, if you start with small projects, a normal school uses in Germany or maybe also in Dallas or in other cities or in Athens, like you, about 150,000 euro per year. The same for energy consumption. The same school gets from my town 20,000. So less a little bit more than 10% for books, for computers, for everything. So they get nearly 10% for education, and the rest is for energy. Stupid story. So if you stay on this track, you lose always. So we make programmers at schools. So you get 50% of the energy bill reduction for your school. So the schools started programs reducing the energy bill by closing the windows, starting awareness campaigns, blah, 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 blah. Just by doing so, without any technical solutions, you could reduce the energy bill by 20% and more. So they doubled their money. So they get it now, €45,000 per year. It was a big success. Mm. And we reduced the energy bill, and this was also an impact for the environment. But the main point was they make business with us. Yeah, not only environmental programs, and earn their own money for good education.
Great stuff. Thank you very much. And then we've just got a couple minutes left, so I was going to come back to Mayor Patterson, if I may, on this question that you're also involved in the National League of Cities as well. So I just wanted to get your reflections on how mayors can be really empowered to achieve the kind of local transformations that we're talking about, and anything that you'd like to say on the future of these transatlantic relations, which have been such an integral part of this project, to the future of successful cities.
Yeah, I want to start by basically saying to Mayor Cognetti, sing it. You know, everything that the mayor said is spot on. And it's been a real challenge. But the National League of Cities this year, under my leadership, we are really taking up a major effort to become more international and internationally engaged. I have had more international trips this year. I was at C40. I was at the State of Europe. I was at, which was in Brussels. I was at the Mayor's Forum, the World Cities Summit in Vienna. I had a great opportunity, thanks to Das Progressive Zentrum, to spend a full 8 or 9 days in Bonn, Duisburg, and Berlin, and getting to tour the heartland, German heartland, and kind of see what's going on there. And so that all said, you know, it's incumbent upon us to continue to be the voice telling the real stories up on the Hill. NLC, that's what we do. The U.S. Conference of Mayors, that's what they do as well. A lot of the what's called the Big Seven are always sitting there advocating hard for the things that we are currently experiencing. I'll be really quick with this. Much like the mayor had just mentioned, we're actually under contract with the Department of Transportation for $16 million under IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, to put in 250 charge stations for EVs from Dayton, Ohio, all the way to Athens along the Appalachian Highway. And unfortunately, that DOGE kind of happened to it. Everything stopped. That funding has been pulled back. We're still somewhat hopeful. But, you know, to share on the Hill, and a lot of the areas that you see throughout the Appalachian region are impoverished areas for a sundry different reasons. Some of it is because of the extractive economies that they've lived through. And so it's having to share the message on the Hill that you're hurting, you're harming those who are in the most need and also the most desire to prosper like everyone else is. So I would just encourage all mayors internationally, you know, to continue to partner. One of the things that has really struck me is when I was on the trip to Germany was to hear the narrative, whether it was in Bonn, Duisburg, or in Berlin, the lack of trust in the United States. And I had to flip that narrative on its head and say, I understand exactly what you're saying, but please don't misconstrue the narrative coming out of the White House as that of us who are mayors in our own communities, because we want these relationships. We want to cultivate everything. The things I saw in Germany were just unbelievable. and positive. And I'm going, you know, I was like any good mayor, I was stealing all these ideas and I'm bringing them back to Athens again and deploying them, but wanting to have this relationship continue on moving forward, because it's us that it is our total responsibility to keep the cultivation of subnational diplomacy going while the White House has decided to strip it away. We can't allow that to happen. We need to keep working hard on relationships around the globe, and in particular, you know, across transatlantic lines. I was in Ukraine, and my heritage comes from Ukraine, and I sit there and see what's going on there too. And we have to step in and do everything we possibly can to help. You know, you can't watch a sovereign nation become dismantled by an individual who's basically a maniac who's lost their mind, and allow that to happen.
In these turbulent times, transatlantic cooperation is more important than ever. It is refreshing and inspiring to see how industrial heartlands can benefit from each other when transatlantic channels are open. What I personally took away from the conversation is to think global and act local. That means understand the global and national trends by tailoring your actions to the local circumstances. For example, making solar attractive by allowing fast and easy installation and connecting the economic benefits from using renewables with the local income tax in Athens. For today, we come to an end. I hope you enjoyed the high-level mayor panel and found it as inspiring and thought-provoking as I did. And if we made you curious, Steve Bessersen recently shared his insights from touring through industrial heartlands in Germany as part of our Midwestern Leaders Study Tour in 2025. He explores the political whiplash of shifting national policies and the enduring struggle to protect community heritage in times of structural transformation. His compelling essay is linked in the show notes. Tune in to our next episode, where we want to look at the bigger picture. We will put the spotlight on the second panel at the closing conference, where we will hear what two esteemed transatlantic thinkers and practitioners had to say about the decisive role of subnational diplomacy for the future of our industrial heartlands in times of an unprecedented transatlantic rupture. Thank you very much for listening to our podcast, Talking Progress, the podcast that explores progressive ideas for Germany, Europe, and transatlantic spaces. This podcast is produced in the context of the Transatlantic Dialogue on the Industrial Heartlands Project, a project by das Progressive Zentrum and distinguished partners at the Progressive Policy Institute, Georgetown University's BMW Center for German and European Studies, and the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and with the support of the German Federal Ministry for Economic Affairs and Climate Action. For more information, please visit our website at industrial-heartlands.com or check the link in our show notes.